This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and today I'm joined by another special guest. This is, a list of doctors who I believe people need to get to know so that they can start taking control of their health. This whole healthcare debacle is just getting more and more out of control daily. I read something yesterday that said if you were to, you know, line up all the Medicaid patients in this country, it would be the 20th largest country in the world, which is about 72 million people on Medicaid. And I think that's what Obamacare really is. It's Medicaid for all. And it's really a travesty because people who are expecting to get health care actually are not going to get it. And if they are able to sign in, they're going to end up spending a lot more money and being gatekeeped out of the healthcare system, mostly due to cost. The second thing is going to be access to procedures and medications and doctors that they want. So what Dr. Gross does is he gets people out of this system. And I think he's a visionary. And I read his website and I had to have him on my show so that everybody could get to know him. So Dr. Gross, I want to thank you so much for coming on today.
Good morning, Dr. George. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you end up in Florida in family practice?
Well, my name's Lee Gross. I'm originally from the greater Cleveland area, born and raised in Cleveland. I did my undergraduate training at Ohio State University, spent a few years doing cardiology research at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation in their cardiac catheterization lab up there. Did my medical school at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. Stuck around and did my residency training at University Hospitals of Cleveland, where I was their chief resident. And immediately out of residency, I decided I was tired of the gray skies of Cleveland and wanted to see a little bit of sunshine. So my wife and I moved to Southwest Florida, where I set up a private practice primary care. So I've been in Southwest Florida since 2002 in the independent practice of medicine. And I'm practicing in a relatively small community of Northport, Florida, which at the time in 2002, we had 25,000 residents. We very quickly grew to about 60,000 residents and now are the have the largest population in Sarasota County. And so I'm located in southern Sarasota County.
Well, I have to ask you this question because it seems to me that people who graduated, I graduated in 98, and there was a big trend towards joining big practices and not going out on your own. Were you one of the few people in your class that decided to hang a shingle?
Well, I joined a multi-specialty group the first year.
Okay.
But what I did was I started a satellite clinic for them in a new city. So I was always in an office by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But after the first year, I bought the practice from the group and just took it independent.
What made you do that? I'm just curious to figure out what the pressure was that made you, again, buck the system and do your own thing.
That was probably more the internal politics of the particular group. At the time, we were dealing with some major malpractice crises here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of debates over malpractice caps and tort reform, but the malpractice premiums of the multi-specialty group were skyrocketing, such that the internal politics was making it very difficult to keep a multi-specialty group together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the surgeons' rates were skyrocketing and the primary care rates were not necessarily going up as fast. And, you know, one group felt they were subsidizing another group, and it just created some internal dynamics that were just too difficult to deal with.
Now, when you went out on your own, I assume that you went out as a standard primary care doctor, meaning you take everything, all the health insurance plans, Medicaid, Medicare. Is that right?
We tried originally to take Medicaid, but it was absolutely impossible to deal with, so we probably only were Medicaid providers for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
We took traditional Medicare, which was the bulk of our practice, again being in Florida, and then traditional PPO commercial plans, but since we were a relatively underserved community at the time, we were really able to pick and choose what type of insurance products we wanted to interact with. So we never dealt with any Medicare Advantage plans, and we didn't take any HMOs at all in our practice. So we were able to really sort of pick and choose the best quality payers that we could at the time.
Well, you leapfrogged ahead of probably 99% of the providers, or I should say doctors in this country, because I remember when I came out, there was a big move towards capitation, and the first couple of years of my practice, I don't remember really reading these contracts until, you know, the news came home that you were signing away your rights and your ability to get paid in a timely way. And you guys really were very smart from the beginning. You chose healthcare plans that you could actually take and actually stay open.
Well, we had some interesting challenges of dealing with some of these commercial contracts too. Just they would take a position with us that it was an all or none contract. Mm-hmm. Either you participate in every single plan they offer, or you don't participate with them at all. And fortunately, at the time, we were in a position to negotiate those, so we were able to sort of carve out some of the better plans and leave some of the more challenging ones. You had mentioned about Medicaid earlier. You were talking about that, and the interesting thing with Medicaid is they pay probably 60% of what Medicare does. So if I have a patient that has Medicare as a primary insurance and then they sign up for Medicaid as a secondary, traditionally, if somebody has a secondary insurance, Medicare would pay the initial 80%, and then the secondary or supplemental insurance would pick up the 20%. Well, when Medicaid is the supplement, what they do is they basically say, well, Medicare has already paid you more than are allowable, therefore you have to write off the 20%. So you were immediately taking a 20% off-the-top reduction when the patient signed up for Medicaid.
Wow. And for people who don't understand that, when Dr. Gross says 60% of Medicare rate, that means it's about 18 cents on the dollar, if you really want to put it into dollars and cents. That's amazing. I didn't even know that. So
you would still have to submit the claims.
Uh-huh.
And Medicaid at the time was all paper claims, so you'd still have to submit the claims to see that you saw the patient to Medicaid, but they wouldn't pay you. So now you're doing work for nothing.
Well, you're also paying because you have to pay paper, mailing charges, labor, all the things that you traditionally used to be cheaper, now are crazy expensive.
Right. So here's the interesting thing in Florida is our Medicaid, we have a share of cost for Medicaid, which means that the patients have a deductible to meet. And unlike a commercial insurance plan where that deductible is every year it resets, on Medicaid it resets every month. And that deductible can be in the hundreds of dollars. So it's not uncommon for us to have a Medicaid patient that has to meet the first $600 every month out of their pocket for health expenses. Now, if they had $600 a month to spend towards health expenses, it probably wouldn't be on Medicaid.
No.
But interestingly, if they go to the emergency room, there is no deductible. So you can see exactly where these patients are going to get the bulk of their care.
Absolutely. And you can also, if you extrapolate out, you can see how the healthcare system could have become so expensive. Because people are using, the ER as their primary care location for everything, for cuts, for bruises, for earwax in my iteration.
Right.
It's just a disaster and it's a waste of money. And the it's also funny, if people don't realize this, but you may not have gotten paid for seeing the patient in your private office, but the ER and the hospital got paid because they have a separate pot that they get to access from the government.
Exactly.
So this is a system that's built that works against private physicians and patients, works for big corporations, big hospitals, because they don't seem to have to play the same game that we do.
Right. Well, Florida is one of the states that chose not to expand the Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And, we still actually increased our Medicaid rolls quite significantly, even though we didn't expand Medicaid, because when many people went to sign up for health insurance under healthcare.gov, they found they qualified for Medicaid when they didn't realize they already qualified for it. So a lot of people were, we still expanded Medicaid even though we didn't officially change the rules for it. But that hadn't changed the access because there are no new doctors taking Medicaid. They had said that primary care doctors, Medicaid and Medicare will pay the same rates for 2 years. Well, that's not really an incentive for somebody to start up a Medicaid practice.
Mm-mm.
And I can tell you that I do take care of Medicaid patients in my existing practice, not as a Medicaid provider, but the patients pay me directly for my services outside of Medicaid. But if I need any specialty care, I just had a patient that needed to see a vascular surgeon. We tried for a week to try to find him a vascular surgeon that would see him. We couldn't find anybody. The closest primary care doctor to me that is accepting new adult Medicaid patients is about 2 hours away.
That's quite a distance.
Yes.
And so the access still is not going to be any better. What's promised under the Affordable Care Act that, you know, first of all, you can like your doctor, you can keep them, is great. That's not happening. But actually getting to see a doctor is not going to be any different. So are these folks going to ER still just because they can't get in to see a private physician?
Absolutely.
So nothing's changed, but the bill is huge. It's getting bigger and bigger every day, it seems to me.
Right. But since then, we have modified our practice, and we're now able to provide care for these people at rates that pretty much every one of them can afford. And that's something we're pretty excited about down here.
Well, actually, I want to explore that in more detail, because I think that people have this idea that if they don't have health insurance, that they can't afford to see a doctor, that they can't afford a private physician. And it's been the biggest PR blitz that's been totally untrue. And it's, I think, led people down the path to this debacle where they're going to pay more and get nothing. So when we come back from the break, I want you to really go into detail as to how you changed your practice from the traditional family practice model to the, you know, concierge for all, basically, for the common man. I think that's your tagline that I think people need to know about. And hopefully doctors copy this across the country. This is how I think medicine can change. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that allergy season in Georgia is year-round? Beginning in July through November, ragweed is the predominant pollen. But February through May, tree pollen causes allergy symptoms. Grass pollen occurs from mid-May through the beginning of July. If you suffer from daily nasal congestion, sneezing, runny nose, headache, ear clogging, or popping, or a chronic cough, these symptoms may be due to allergy and not infection. You should also think of allergies if there is no fever, chills, or colored mucus. Treatment should include nasal salt water sprays over the counter or antihistamines that do not cause drowsiness. If you have persistent headaches, a decrease in your sense of smell, or nosebleeds, you should see an ear, nose, and throat physician. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we have our special guest, Dr. Lee Gross of Epiphany Health, a primary care practice in Florida. And before the break, we were trying to break down some of the pressures that doctors face who don't have the deep pockets of hospitals and are not the darlings of the government, and who actually have to run a practice in an efficient and cost-effective manner, but while practicing the Hippocratic Oath, which is kind of, they're counterintuitive at this point. It's almost as if you have to pick one versus the other if you really want to stay open and thrive. And that's if you keep doing the same thing expecting a different result. And Dr. Gross, you're about to tell us what made you change the running in place model and actually move ahead and start a practice that is all about the patient and all about patient care and transparency of price?
Well, thank you. I can tell you that in our community where I'm practicing, over the past several years, every single private practice of primary care has been bought up or joined large multi-specialty organizations, large hospital groups. My practice, which is now a two-physician independent practice, is the last independent practice in the entire community. We're the only two standing, and the only reason that we are the only two standing is because of the concierge program, the Epiphany Health program that we put in place. Just like every other physician, we were struggling with more and more paperwork, more and more unfunded mandates. Every time the government mentions the word stamping out fraud and abuse, that's another 100 pages of paperwork that needed to be filled out. And it was just becoming overly burdensome. And so we would sit down time and again and just say, we've got to get out of this. What can we do to make this better, to make it more enjoyable, or actually just taking care of your patients instead of having the insurance company manage the care and us just being, us implementing the insurance company's care plan. And one day a business person approached my partner and said, I'm spending, $1,000 a month for every one of my employees for an insurance plan, and every one of my employees sees you as their primary care doctor. And why don't I just pay you directly to care for my employees, and then I can just pick up a catastrophic high-deductible health plan, and even if I paid for their deductible every month or every year, I probably would still come out ahead at the end of the year by not giving so much money to the insurance company. And so we sat down at the end of the day, and he told me the story about this guy and said, why can't we do this? Why can't we just contract directly with the small businesses, or why can't we just contract directly with the individuals and see, what we could do by carving out primary care from the expensive insurance product. But at the time, we were very risk averse. We didn't want to jettison our practices. We all had full practices. We, collectively, my partner and I probably had about 7,000 traditionally insured and Medicare patients. So we didn't want to lose those people, but we wanted to capture an additional market. We wanted to capture a self-paying market and to help take care of the people that didn't have insurance or couldn't afford it or had high deductibles. So we determined what our overhead needed to be, and we tried to set a price point that would be affordable for just about anybody. And we picked under about $80 a month, because that's what a lot of people paid for their cell phones. Then we decided, what do we need to support primary care? Because primary care is cheap. We're selling our brain time. We're not using a $10,000 hip orthotic. We're not putting in a $100,000 pacemaker. We just are selling our time. So that by itself is not expensive. But when we start putting in labs and we start putting in imaging and physical therapy and all the other things that we need to do our job, that's where things became very expensive. So we began to reach out to lab providers, and we negotiated contracted rates, and so we're buying our labs at wholesale prices. And we reached out to independent imaging centers and contracted for imaging services, and we're paying probably 30% of what you would typically pay if you didn't have health insurance. We contracted with physical therapy groups to provide affordable physical therapy. We contracted with pharmacies for discounts. So we built this whole network of people that supported what we were trying to do. And ultimately, what we ended up doing was putting together the Epiphany Health, our primary care packages, and we bundled all of the things that people would generally need into a flat-priced service. So we charge $83 a month for an individual. We add $69 a month for a spouse. And children, first child's $49 a month, and each individual child is $20 a month. And with that, they get 25 office visits each at no additional charge. So we don't charge copays, we don't charge deductibles. they don't pay anything when they come into the office. If we can do it here in the office, it's done at no additional charge.
Mm-hmm.
So if we give a cortisone shot, it's included. If I do an EKG, it's included. But we also include routine lab work. We include, for women, an annual mammogram and a pap test. We include their flu vaccinations, tetanus boosters, whatever, you know, indicated vaccinations they would need. Anything above that is basically an absolute pass-through. Whatever our cost is for the service, we provide it to the patient at our cost. There's no markup. So, for example, if somebody needed to have a chest x-ray, our contracted rate for a chest x-ray is under $25. If somebody needed to have a CAT scan of the head, our contracted rate is $175. If they need to have an MRI of their knee, our contracted rate is $200. And so that is the price that people will pay. We have a menu with all the prices, and so we can tell our patients to the penny what their health care services are going to cost. So, for example, if I have a patient that has Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I tell that patient, you need to have a CAT scan of the head, and they'd say, well, I have a $5,000 deductible. How much is that going to cost? And I couldn't answer them. I couldn't even begin to tell them. And if I called up the imaging center and I asked, how much is this patient going to pay for a CT scan through the Blue Cross policy? And I'm not picking on Blue Cross. This is any insurer.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, we can't tell you. We'll have to submit the claim and see what happens. If we called the insurer, they couldn't tell us either. The only way to do it is actually to do the service, and then you find out after the fact what your bill was. Well, that's crazy.
It is.
But in our program, I can tell you exactly what that service will cost. And we can decide whether it's a good use of your dollars. So say you came to me and you had injured your knee or your knee was sore. You know, if I'm paying $1,000 a month for a health care policy, I want my MRI because I'm paying for it. I'm paying a fortune for it. I think we should get an MRI, doc. Now, you know, I can spend a half an hour trying to, explain every reason why we don't need an MRI. But if the patient is under our Epiphany program, they can, I can say, well, let's just say we did order an MRI and it showed that you had a small tear. What we're probably going to do is do a steroid injection. Then we might do a little physical therapy if that doesn't help. And then if that doesn't work, then we're going to send you to a surgeon. Well, if we skip the MRI, we can just do the cortisone injection now without spending that money. If that doesn't work, we can send you to physical therapy, and if that doesn't work, then we'll send you for the MRI. We've now saved that patient $200, and the outcome is going to be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when you're spending your own money, you're much smarter at how you use those healthcare dollars. Now, we have done some calculations in terms of what a patient will save if they purchased a traditional PPO insurance policy versus a membership in Epiphany Health with a $10,000 catastrophic high deductible health plan. And over 10 years, a family of four, using current rates, over 10 years, a family of four, if they hit that $10,000 deductible every single year for 10 years, they would still come out about $70,000 ahead.
It's a big difference.
Big difference.
Huge difference. And one thing, as you were explaining that example of the patient, what struck me the most is that you're practicing medicine. You're not practicing defensive medicine. You're not doing algorithms. You're not practicing evidence-based medicine where you basically go to the most expensive test first to cover yourself. It was a thought process, and it was patient-centered, and you didn't expose that patient to unnecessary testing or radiation or anything, yet they had a better outcome. That's what I took home from the story you just told me. And patients need to understand that there's a different style of medicine, old style, old school medicine, which trumps what's going on now in the hospital setting, in the accountable care organization set up. It's not set up like that at all. So when you talk to your colleagues or people who have sold their practices and you tell them what you're doing, what do they say to you? I'm just curious.
Well, I can tell you the people that have sold their practices and are now working sort of within the corporate structure are miserable. Initially, they like it because there's a steady income stream. They don't have to worry about the business side of it, and they feel like they can just practice medicine. But then the finances come into it, and they realize they're really just working for the corporation and not for the patient. And so, you know, their 15-minute office visits became 7-minute office visits, and now they're overseeing, you know, 3 mid-level providers that they're responsible for. And, you know, their metrics they have to meet have just been changed, and their pay starts to come down. And so initially it starts off great, but it's they're miserable after a couple of years in that environment. The people that see what we're doing, they want to replicate it. I get phone calls with regularity of people that want me to help set up practices like this. You know, you mentioned about, you know, the outside influences and protocols and, mm-hmm. and care algorithms. You know, I always wanted to create a marketing piece for our practice that basically showed, you know, under a traditional practice, how many people were really in the room with you, and have a picture of the physician and the patient, but then also the hospital CEO and the insurance executives and the care team with the insurance companies and the government regulators and the insurance regulators and everybody that's actually in that room, mm-hmm. making the determination of what's the appropriate plan for that patient, as opposed to our Epiphany program, which is just a pure relationship between the physician and the patient. And you make a decision not because there's a financial incentive to do it or because you've got to check off the box on your electronic health record. You're making it because it's the right choice for the patient that's in front of you. You can discuss the finances and decide whether or not you're spending the money properly. It's the most pure relationship ever. The patients are so appreciative of the time you spend with them. And they see where their health dollars go. It was enlightening to me to see how this worked. To give you an example of some of the cost savings, I had a patient that had rheumatoid arthritis, and she was seeing the rheumatologist, and she could afford to pay the rheumatologist's fee, but when he sent her to the lab to get her blood work drawn, she was quoted $1,800 for the blood tests. And she called up our office and said, aren't I supposed to get some sort of discount on labs for being a member of the Epiphany program? And we said, yes, you know, but we have to write them through our office. We rewrote the lab order, sent her back to the lab, and her lab tests were now under $100.
Wow.
And so for the savings that she made in just the one trip to the lab alone, she paid for almost 2 years of her membership in our program. And now she can afford to see the rheumatologist. She can afford to now get treatment. The rheumatologist doesn't have to do anything different than he's already doing, except mm-hmm. we now write the orders for the labs based upon what he requested.
What a concept. You know, I want people to think about that for a second while we'll take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that chronic nasal congestion, a decreased sense of smell, and asthma can be signs of allergies? Allergies are caused when the body is exposed to things you breathe in or eat that the body does not like. The body's immune system reacts and attacks it, what it perceives to be the enemy, even if it causes no harm, like pet dander or dust. This leads to swelling. In the nose, this causes congestion. In the bowel, it causes stomach bloating and diarrhea. In the lung, it causes shortness of breath and wheezing. And in the skin, it causes hives and itching. The first line of defense against allergy is avoidance. Dustproofing, washing pets, and keeping them out of the bedroom can help with environmental causes. For food allergies, keeping a diary of things eaten and reaction to them is helpful. Allergy testing is less time-consuming and is a safe and effective way to identify allergies. For a complete evaluation, you should see your allergy specialist.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction and medical director of the Atlanta Healing Center. Please join me on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're speaking with Dr. Lee Gross, who is the co-founder and senior vice president of Epiphany Health. And before the break, we were talking, just getting an education really on how affordable healthcare actually could be if we cut out the middleman and if doctors take the forefront once again in being the advocates for their patient and not agents for the insurance company or the government. I took to heart what you said about your colleagues who sold their practices. It's grass is greener, but on the other side initially, I'm sure. Well, I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm just curious to know, can they get out of these contracts? I know they've already sold their practices, so they don't own their brick and mortar anymore. They can't go back to their physical plant, but have you seen anybody leave and restart themselves?
I've not seen anybody leave, but it's got to be only a matter of time. I know these people are struggling, but I've not seen people leave. I can tell you that when we were approached to purchase our practice, there were non-competes in the contract that basically said, we're going to buy your practice, but if you decide to leave, you have to move 15 miles away for at least a year. So, we'd basically be giving up our right to remain in the community if we decided to leave the organization.
Yeah, I remember I had one of those when I left the group that I first joined. And I wanted to put a number. You were giving some amazing numbers for labs, but I'm on your website now, and if people go to epiphanyhealth.net, you actually talk about price transparency. You definitely mean it. Because there's examples of charges for radiology testing, like nuclear stress test, where a hospital or outside hospital or I guess an affiliate of a hospital might charge $1,400 and the cost for a member is $520. We're not talking about small little discounts here. We're talking about major money savings going on. An MRI of $1,300 that costs less than $300. This is what we're talking about. If this were to be duplicated across the country, I don't think the insurance companies or the Affordable Care Act would actually stand.
Well, there's absolutely still a role for the insurance companies in this model, but it's really for the unexpected expenses, the catastrophic, the high expenses. So, an analogy I like to use is, let's just say we had, if your insurance company for your house had to cover mowing the lawn, sweeping the house, mopping the floors, if it had to cover changing the light bulb when it burnt out, if it had to cover every single little maintenance thing that is an expected expense, you can imagine how expensive that insurance policy would be if you filed a homeowner's claim every time a light bulb burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we're asking our health insurance to do by covering primary care and routine services. We want it to cover the runny nose. We want it to cover the stubbed toe. These are things that you can expect to pay out of your pocket that should be affordable. So when you bundle the primary care in with that, it makes the insurance policies expensive. Now, if you take all the routine and predictable expenses out and make insurance actual insurance again, which is basically a protection against an unexpected loss, that stabilizes the insurance market much more, as opposed to, the Affordable Care Act, the approach that basically makes the insurance companies come up and provide first-dollar coverage. Well, that makes insurance quite unaffordable. But then also, when you bundle affordable primary care and try to have to sell it in the same package as a program that covers $150,000 pacemaker insertions, it basically inflates the cost of access to the primary care. So when you carve the two out from one another, it stabilizes both markets very nicely. Now, we've been up and operational since January of 2010, so this is definitely a sustainable program for us. Now, again, this for us, we added this on we've created a hybrid product. It's in addition to our existing established practices. So I still have a large Medicare practice. I still have a large traditionally insured practice, but I also have a concierge practice on top of what I have. So every patient that's enrolled in that is additional revenue to our practice.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that as far as the finances of it, our concierge practice is probably about 5 to 10% of our patient volume, but about 30 to 35% of our revenue. So it definitely helps stabilize the practice.
I'm going to ask you two questions based on what you just said. You said you have a Medicare population, and I know I unfortunately had to stop seeing Medicare patients because of the regulations were just so onerous. There was no way that you couldn't run afoul of them, whether you underbilled somebody or overbilled them. It was all considered fraud. Can a Medicare patient, because I'm sure that they'd want to, because there's more access technically, can they join your Epiphany practice and keep their Medicare, or
no.
Is it mutually exclusive?
They are mutually exclusive. We do not enroll Medicare patients into our Epiphany program. So when our patients that are in the Epiphany program turn 65 and are eligible for Medicare, they are now Medicare. We bill them as if they were a traditional Medicare patient, fee for service. The only way we could do that is to if we wanted to include a Medicare patient in our Epiphany program, mm-hmm. we would have to opt out of Medicare. The Medicare rules are very strict that you cannot take money from a Medicare patient for services that are covered within the Medicare program. So you must take it as a Medicare provider. So, yeah, the two can't mix.
Okay.
And when you're dealing with Medicare, it's guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
And it's a very punitive arrangement.
And have you noticed of the patients that are in the health plan or your program that they've changed the type of insurance that they carry, that they might have, before Affordable Care Act, that is, gone to a catastrophic plan to save money because they didn't need the traditional PPO?
The vast majority of patients that enrolled in our program initially had no insurance. They were sort of that group of people that the Affordable Care Act was supposed to try to help.
Mm-hmm.
The people that didn't have insurance, the people with pre-existing conditions that couldn't afford health insurance, those are the people that we really, really signed up. And when the Affordable Care Act rolled out, they basically did sign up for, the bronze plans, mm-hmm. the high deductible plans that are in there. I didn't have too many patients that switched from a PPO plan to high deductible plans. That didn't happen a whole lot. We're still, really right now hitting the people that the Affordable Care Act missed.
Okay.
Which is actually kind of interesting because, I'm very much opposed to the Affordable Care Act, not because of what it's intended to do, but what it's actually going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken many trips to Washington, D.C. and traveled the country talking to people about it. And we were doing a health fair up at a college up in Sarasota, and we were trying to market our program to the parents of the students and some of the employees of the college there. And one of the vendors at the health fair were the navigators from the Affordable Care Act that were there to sign the college kids up for the program. And one of the navigators came over to our table, and we had a sign that said, no health insurance, no problem, affordable health care. And she was fascinated by what we were doing, and she said, this is really interesting. I'm here to sign people up for Affordable Care Act policies. And I said, that really misses a lot of people. I said, when you sign people up for your policies, they have a $6,500 annual deductible to meet, so they might be able to afford your policies, but they can't afford to get health care. And she said, I know, it's a horrible problem. I said, yes, it is. And I said, since Medicaid didn't expand in Florida, you now have that gap of people between 100 to 138% of the federal poverty level that get no subsidies for their plans. So not only will they get a $6,500 deductible when they sign up, but they have to pay $600 a month for that. They can't afford that. She said, I know, it's awful. And I said, yes, it is. She took a huge stack of our brochures, and she said, I know a lot of people that could use this. She said, this is fantastic. So we now have Affordable Care Act navigators as our marketing force.
You should have hired her. That's awesome.
Yeah. I was one of the last times I was up in Washington. we had the nurses' union out in front of the Capitol. There were about 1,500 nurses with T-shirts that said, healthcare for everyone, send the bill to Wall Street. And I was up there with about 100 different doctors, and we were, again, in front of the Capitol and wearing our white coats with a button that said, ask me about healthcare reform. And it didn't take long for them to realize we were both there for the same reason, but mm-hmm. had absolutely completely different visions of how to get there. And one of the nurses came up to me and she said, what are you here for? And I said, we're here to talk to members of Congress about free market principles and how they can affect and control the cost of health care. And she said, oh, how would you do that? And I said, well, with high deductible health plans, health savings accounts, and through our direct primary care for routine services. She immediately said, oh, so if you're not rich, you're going to die in the streets. And I pulled out my brochure and I handed it to her and I said, no, actually, you know, for less than you pay for your cell phone that you have in your pocket, you can get all your routine care. You can treat your diabetes, your asthma, your high blood pressure. I can do your pap test, mammogram, give you your vaccinations, and do everything you need without any other money coming out of your pocket. And she said, well, this is fantastic, and took it over and shared it with all the other union members. And, you know, these are the types of responses I get no matter where I go in the country, no matter what side of the political aisle you fall on, is that it's a fantastic way to provide care for people. I'm working with a senator from the state of Michigan, a state senator, and they're working on a pilot program that basically utilizes our practice model as a Medicaid a medical home with a health savings account and high deductible health plan wrapped around it. So we hope to be able to put that together pretty soon.
And is that something that's going to be nationalized, do you think, if it works out?
Well, I'm hopeful that you know, if we show that these things actually, or these types of programs are actually successful at doing what we claim they're going to do, that you know, these can be models that can be emulated across the country.
I wish you all the best with that, honestly. I just see the power of the lobbyists and the power they have in Washington, and you're going to run up against the big monster. This is a money-making machine, the healthcare system, and it's not the doctors and patients that are benefiting from it. It's above us. And
oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'm so jaded at this point. I think the doctors and patients should work together and just completely remove the middleman. I understand what you're saying for something that's catastrophic. But to me, anytime the government steps in there, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, they're going to Bigfoot something. There's going to be some regulation. Somebody's going to be, you know, have their toes stepped on and doesn't want their pie taken from them, and they'll water it down. Do you have any fear of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we're working with the business community here in the state of Florida.
Awesome.
To basically help get some protective language in the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in the right here. So, you know, that's the good thing, is that, you know, we are doing the right thing. I'm hopeful that we get to a critical mass where that won't, you know, where we're not quite so vulnerable to that sort of thing. I'd like to share, if we have some time, about a story about when I tried to get some rates for hospitalization.
Oh, please hold that thought, because we'll revisit it when we return after the break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that throat itching and tickling, nasal itching, eye itching, skin itching, eczema, and hives are all signs of allergy? A person suffering from allergy does not always have sneezing and a runny nose. If you have noticed that these symptoms are always present year-round, you may have allergies to what you are eating. Foods such as wheat, eggs, dairy products, and corn are present in most foods. Corn in particular is present in most processed foods and soft drinks in the form of high fructose corn syrup. Completely removing these foods from your diet for at least 2 months can in some cases stop the symptoms. Keeping a food diary or getting tested for food allergies is the fastest way to find out what foods are causing your symptoms. If you think you have a food allergy, it is important to see a doctor who specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of allergy. By rotating the food into the diet once every 2 weeks, allergies can be controlled and you can still eat the food.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're speaking with the Vice President of Epiphany Health, which is a concierge primary care practice, partially concierge, I should say, who's providing, I think, a template that people across the country need to know about. And to me, this is about PR. The nurse who told you that if you don't have health insurance, you're going to die is a victim of what's been pounded into people's heads. And from the government, from private insurance companies, trying to make themselves relevant. And it's the best kept secret. People really need to understand that if they talk to their doctor directly, they can get better care. And before the break, you were going to let us know what happens when people get hospitalized. Because, you know, everybody's healthy. Not everybody's going to be, you know, only use preventative care. What happens when you do have to get hospitalized?
Before I tell that story, I just want to briefly share about one last visit I took to Washington.
Sure.
And I was sitting down with a congressman, and I said, "Congressman, I said, if you could plan the ideal health care reform, you would want something that creates total price transparency, provides affordable access to routine and basic services for everyone. It disconnects health care from employment, so you can change jobs, or if you lost your job, you wouldn't lose your access to health care. You would want to encourage a broad primary care base and incentivize people to go into primary care. You'd want to set up a program that doesn't discriminate based upon pre-existing conditions or health status or gender." And I said, "You passed a 2,700-page law and have written 60,000 pages of regulations that accomplished almost none of those, but in the two-page brochure I have in my hand, we accomplished all of them." And, you know, that's the power of what we've been able to accomplish with this direct primary care program, Epiphany Health. As far as the hospital, you know, the hospital is always the deep abyss of healthcare expenses. It is shrouded in mystery as to what the actual costs are. And in one of the talks I give, I show a slide of an actual patient bill. A patient of mine that went to the emergency room with traditional insurance, and they had a CAT scan of the belly. They had some blood work done, some basic tests, and the bill came to $19,000.
Oh, no.
And I show an itemized bill next to my costs. If that same patient came to me, I ordered the same blood work, the same CAT scans, did the same exact treatment, where we could do it for less than $300. The price is insane, mm-hmm. The inflation of the hospital costs. And so we tried to sit down with the chief operating officer, actually it was the chief financial officer, and we wanted to get some price transparency to get an idea of what, if we sent one of our patients to the hospital, what it would cost. And I asked him, I said, you know, if I get a phone call at 6 o'clock in the evening from a patient having chest pain, and I say, go to the emergency room, what financial commitment have I just made for that patient? You know, what have I... You know, give me a ballpark as to what it's going to cost. And he said, "Well, I can't tell you that." And I said, "Well, that's probably your most common ER visit for chest pain. What would be an average bill for something like that?" "Well, I couldn't tell you. There's so many variables." So we just went back and forth about this for the longest time until I finally just said, "Look, I'll be as specific as I can. A patient comes in with chest pain. You do an EKG, a chest X-ray, 3 sets of blood work, put them on nitroglycerin, give them an aspirin, oxygen, and give them a turkey sandwich. What's that cost?" And I said, "Is it $1,000? Is it $10,000? Just a ballpark. No, you can't. The information is not available. There was no disclosure whatsoever. And he said, even if we did have that, there is no mechanism in place that we could actually collect money from the patients at the time of service, or we couldn't itemize a bill for them at the time of service. It's just not how the system is designed. It's designed to be shrouded in secrecy so that, you know, the hospitals and the insurers all still remain in control and relevant. It's in the insurer's best interest to keep the prices high. Otherwise, they lose some relevance.
Well, they also lose their money because, you know, if the prices are high, people end up paying a premium and not accessing the system as much. I mean, it's just a money-making venture. It's not, well, throughout the healthcare system, the corporate healthcare system, it's a money-making venture, and they have the benefit of not having to show their hand. So after you've had the service and you're on the hook, that's when, you know, they have you by, you know, the short hairs, basically. And they know that, and they like that, and they have help to keep it that way. It's just, it's so sad that it has to, that it came to this. Do you have any idea? I mean, I have my own theories about how we got here, but I mean, this is not, it's just within 20, 25 years that this system really got as bad as it did. What do you think are the pressures that led us to this point? Who dropped the ball?
I think physicians probably dropped the ball. The physicians never stood up for themselves. They never stood up for their patients. They were enjoying, you know, seeing the Medicare dollars come in, you know, starting in the 1960s. They did very well in those systems. But I think one of the big things that happened is the organizations that represented physicians started then collecting money from the federal government. And so when the American Medical Association received its exclusive contract on the CPT coding, which is used to bill for every service provided to Medicare and any commercially insured patient in the country, when the American Medical Association now gets more money from its licensing of CPT than it does from its physician memberships, you lose all credibility. You have no ability to represent your members. And so when, you know, the federal government says, you know, we're thinking about overhauling the healthcare system, and by the way, when we do that, we're not sure we're going to need CPT coding anymore, but we'd like your support. You're not in a position to represent physicians at all when that's the case. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when the American Medical Association endorsed the healthcare reform legislation without anything included in it that the American Medical Association has been fighting for decades, that just tells you, you know, we've lost our way. And so now the American Medical Association representation is probably only about 15% of practicing physicians.
Yeah, they work against us, in my opinion. They certainly aren't our advocates at this point.
I agree 100%.
And, you know, I think this is, I'm pretty much an optimist, and I think this is an opportunity. This whole rollout of the Accountable Care Act, Accountable Care, Affordable Care, it should be accountable too. Affordable Care Act is such a debacle that people, you can make it sound like it's pie in the sky until the rubber hits the road. When people start to have to pay these premiums, when they thought they paid them, they end up in the doctor's office and they actually never got paid, or the insurance didn't even put them on their insurance rolls. That's when people are going to be up in arms. And I see that as an opportunity for practices like yours, groups like Association of American Physician and Surgeons, and independent doctors to step into the breach and tell people, we've been here all along and this is how you do it. Is that how you see this potentially playing out?
Absolutely. This is our opportunity. I am on the National Executive Board of Docs for Patient Care, which is a 501c6 physician organization that basically tries to represent or be the voice of actively practicing physicians. And we have just recently launched the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization of which I'm the president of. And that the sole purpose of that organization is to educate people across the country that there are free market possibilities in healthcare, and to show them other ways to do things without necessarily having it government run. So we are going to be actively working on that and educating the American public.
I definitely want to learn more about it because I want to be a part of the solution and not just, you know, tell people what's wrong. We need to tell them how they can work their way out of it.
Absolutely. We can't just complain about it. We've got to show that there is a better way forward.
Exactly. And what's the best way to reach you?
Well, you can go to my website at Epiphany Health, E-P-I-P-H-A-N-Y, health.net, and our contact information is through there.
That's excellent. I really want to thank you. I know you're busy, and I really appreciate you taking your time out today to speak on this subject, because I think it's one of the things, it's a black hole for people. Every time people learn there's a free market for medicine, they're like, I didn't know that. Why didn't I know that? And you are not just talking about it, but you're doing something. And the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, is that for doctors only, or can patients also support it?
The foundation is for anybody that wants to be part of it. Now, this is just starting up, so we don't have information for that. But the physician organization is Docs for Patient Care, docs, the number 4, patientcare.org, the website. And I will be on a panel discussion in Atlanta on May 7th.
Wow.
I'll be presenting at the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. It's a national show of insurers and benefit administrators from all around the country. And so,
Doctor, I have to interrupt. They do a show, Healthcare Consumerism, every Friday on America's Web Radio, and we'll be at the expo as well.
Outstanding. Well, I'll be doing the pre-conference on May 7th in the morning.
Well, I wish I could be there to join you, but my heart and spirit are with you, just so you know. And hopefully we'll get a chance to meet, because I think that the more doctors who understand this meet and gather and, you know, to collectively have our voices heard, we can make a difference.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I hope you have a great day. And again, one more time, your website?
www.epiphanyhealth.net.
Thanks again, Dr. Gross. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Thank you.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.